Chapter 8. After Life.
I just don't understand, Drusha kept saying.
Then stop trying, said Max. They were in the old kitchen of Helter Fortress, and she was brewing caffeine in a copper pot.
I suppose he could have wandered away when my back was turned, said Drusha. But he said he'd been there for hours, and that can't have been the case, because...
His voice trailed off. He realized he was chafing his upper arms with his hand, and was still wearing his coat.
It's so cold in here, he said.
It is, she agreed. He walked over to the sink. His breath was making steam in the air.
There's ice in the sink. Frost on the inside of the windows. Max,
we've been told to ignore it, she said.
Max, it's a warm day outside.
Is it? She asked wearily. She put two tin cups of caffeine on the old table. Drink, she said. Drusha peered up through the window. The sky was very dark and unsettled. It looked like evening setting in, but it was still mid-afternoon.
Is there a storm coming? He asked.
I guess there must be, said Max. He sat down, facing her.
What the hell's going on, Jermaine? I walked out of the gates not 2 hours ago, and it was sunny and clear. Now I come back and it's like midwinter.
She shrugged. She looked uneasy, and Jermaine Max seldom appeared uneasy. There's stuff going on, and we're instructed not to ask questions, she said.
That's not really good enough, he replied.
It has to be for me, she said. This is my job. I'm assigned to assist.
Well, I'm not, he said.
I think I've had enough of this. I think I might go. She looked at him. Don't screw things up, Valentin, she said. They're offering you an off-world ticket, the thing you've always wanted.
Well, he began, I've done my part. I've done what I can.
Tell me about this man you met, she said.
It was just a man, out for a walk.
And he vanished?
No, of course he didn't. He must have walked off. It was nothing.
What did you talk about? She asked.
I don't know. The countryside. He was a local man. I think he said he was in the logging industry.
Did he have a name?
Before he could answer, the kitchen door opened, and Vorier and Betancourt walked in.
We'd like to have a word with the Magos,
Vorier said to Max. She nodded, then realized it meant they were asking her to leave.
Max got up, shot a look at Drusha, and walked out.
Vorier sat down facing Drusha. Betancourt stood, leaning against the larder cupboards.
Let's start with instructions, said Vorier. You follow them, Magos. You don't come and go as you please.
I didn't know that, said Drusha.
You do now, said Vorier.
So,
that won't happen again, will it? Not now you know.
It's for your safety, Valentin, said Betancourt.
Drusha shrugged grudgingly.
All right, he said, but I don't like this very much at all.
Now, about this man you met,
said Vorier, ignoring the remark.
Tell me about him.
I just went over this with Max, Drusha said. He was just he said he lived locally. He knew the area. The way he talked, he knew the history. He ran a timber business, or his father did. I get the feeling he'd taken it over. That was it, really.
But you thought it was odd, said Betancourt.
Drusha turned to look at her.
Just in hindsight, really, ma'am, he said. I didn't see him approach in the first place. I just looked up, and there he was. And I didn't see him leave. But I'm sure that was just me.
You're a very observant man, said Vorier.
He put Drusha's notebook on the table and opened it.
You're a Magos biologist. It's part of the training. These notes you took today, they are a testament to an acute level of observation. Details of plant and bird and insect that I would have missed.
I'm not very good with people, said Drusha. If he'd been a little hill hawk, I could have probably told you which direction he flew off in, how fast, and where his roost was.
Did he tell you his name? Asked Betancourt.
Yes. I think he said it was Essek.
Vorier and Betancourt exchanged glances. Betancourt stepped forwards and put a data slate on the table in front of Drusha.
Is this him?
She asked.
No. No, that's a much older man, much older.
She adjusted the display.
How about this?
Drusha pushed his spectacles down his nose and squinted at the Pict.
Yes, he said. Yes, that's him. Who is he? Is he a suspect? Is he a criminal?
His name is Essek Fargul,
said Vorier. So related to the man who died here? Asked Drusha.
Both images are Essek Fargul, said Vorier, taken 40 years apart. He is the man who died here, in the fifth floor bedroom, 30 years ago.
There was a long silence.
Well, that's,
said Drusha.
I mean, that's patently ridiculous. I mean, I spoke to him. I shook his hand.
Quite possibly, said Vorier. That doesn't change the fact that he's dead.
I shook his hand, said Drusha quietly.
Take a deep breath, said Bettencourt softly. Sometimes these things are difficult to process.
No, not really, ma'am, said Drusha. Grokshit, however, is difficult to process. Your data is wrong, Master Vorier. He clearly isn't dead.
He died of age-related illness and poor circumstance, said Vorier. He was 97.
Then the body was misidentified.
Magos, Drusha, please try to accept this information, said Vorier. Even if Fargul was somehow still alive, to admit the man you saw was much younger.
Well, juvenile at work, said Drusha. It reverses the aging process, doesn't it? That's what I've heard. I've never had it myself.
I have, said Medea Bettencourt. I am 164 standard years old.
Drusha's eyes widened.
Inquisitor Eisenhorn is at least a century older, she continued. Magos, juvenile work arrests aging. It seldom reverses it. If Fargul was alive, he would not look 50 or 60 years younger than he did in later life.
So you're telling me, said Drusha, a more reasonable explanation is that I met a ghost?
The term is inexact, said Vorier.
And shook his damned hand?
Let's talk about what you discussed with him, said Vorier.
No, said Drusha firmly. No, that's not going to happen. Two things are going to happen first. I want some anxiety meds, strong ones, and I want an explanation that entirely lacks grokshit. And that's not an either-or thing. I want both, now, or I'm going to pack my bag and leave.
Don't be awkward, Magos, said Vorier.
We need to tell him, said Bettencourt, at least the basics.
Drusha thought she was talking to Vorier, but he saw she was looking up into space almost blankly. There was a soft pop, as though Drusha had yawned and cleared his ears. He distinctly heard a voice say,
Proceed.
What was that? He asked.
I think it would be better coming from you, she said.
Again, she was not speaking to Drusha or Vorier.
I know you're tired, but I think...
Wait.
Bettencourt looked at Drusha.
Wait a moment, Magos, she said.
Drusha wiggled the tip of his finger in his ear. His head felt blocked and oddly pressurized.
Main room.
What was that? Asked Drusha.
We're going to the main room, said Bettencourt.
Eisenhorn was waiting for them. He was sitting in a high-backed chair, and he looked as if he were enduring some silent torment. Drusha felt that Eisenhorn was not so much sitting in the chair, as the chair was preventing him from falling into the center of the world. His breathing was labored. Audler Jaff was lighting candles to draw back the gloom in the great hall. It was still cold, and the chill seemed to radiate from the Inquisitor. Outside, a storm had begun to grumble.
Have a seat, Magos, Eisenhorn said.
Drusha sat down, facing Eisenhorn. Vorier and Bettencourt withdrew to sit on a bench at the back of the hall. Jaff lit the last of the candles and joined them. There was no one else around.
I have Psychana abilities, Magos, said Eisenhorn. Do you know what that means?
I suppose so. I never met someone who...
You probably have. We don't tend to advertise our talents. Mine are considerable. You had an encounter today, when you left the site without permission.
I'm sorry about that, Drusha began.
Eisenhorn raised a hand to hush him.
I have no interest in rebuking you, Magos. To be honest, I am exhausted. I don't have the time or patience to bring you into line. If you wish for a rebuke, say so, and I will leave it to Vorier and Nail.
"By all means, do continue," said Drusha.
"Your encounter today was with a Psychana Echo, an unanticipated side effect of work I was doing in the cold store."
"A Psychana Echo, sir?"
"You referred to it as a ghost," said Eisenhorn. "That is a surprisingly accurate term."
"It was a ghost?"
"Yes."
Well, Drusha hesitated. "That's very curious. I don't know what to think about that. I may cry a little bit."
"Don't,"
said Eisenhorn.
"Do my best,"
mumbled Drusha.
"Magos, your assessment of the bodies was interesting to me. It confirmed things that I had thought of, ideas I had begun to form. It was remarkably incisive. It revealed secrets that I have not shared."
"Thank you. Did it?"
"The Inquisition is interested in this case for precisely the reasons you suggested," said Eisenhorn. "Marshal Max circulated the facial reconstructs on all networks. One came to my attention. A person I knew. That's what brought me here."
"You knew one of the victims?"
"Personally. She worked for me. A field agent. Her name was Thea Inchabel, an interrogator. The daughter of a very old and dear friend who had joined me to continue her late father's work. She came to this system 9 years ago to follow leads relating to a larger case I have been pursuing. She came at my request. Such investigations, Magos, they take time. Years. I had not heard from her for some while. Her reports had become intermittent. I was concerned. But sometimes Ordo agents in deep cover operation are forced to go dark, for their own safety. Interrogator Inchabel was a very experienced and able operator. I was confident that she..." He paused. "I should have sent someone to find her," he said. "I should not have waited so long. I owed that to her father, to watch out for his daughter."
"I'm sorry, sir," said Drusha.
"Now she's dead," said Eisenhorn. "Her bones lying, unclaimed and unidentified, in Marshal Max's morgue. Her reconstruction of Thea's face brought me to Gershom, to find out what she had found out."
Drusha tilted his head to the side, questioning.
"It's very difficult to get answers from the dead," said Eisenhorn.
"I can imagine," said Drusha.
"But there are means," said Eisenhorn.
Thunder rumbled on the far side of a neighbouring mountain, and the first drops of rain began to strike the hall's windows.
"A process of divination, of psychometric assay. It is a testing and complex craft, and should be attempted only by those who are well trained, or those who are prepared to face the consequences."
"I'm not sure I know what you're describing, sir," said Drusha.
"In layman's terms, Magos, a séance."
"Oh," said Drusha.
"The term we use is auto-séance," said Eisenhorn. "Thea left nothing except her bones. No clothing, no effects, no trace of where she had been for 9 years, where she had lived. So, when I first arrived, I conducted a psychic audience with the remains. It was unpleasant and unrewarding."
Drusha
began, but didn't really know what to say. "Thea had been dead for too long," said Eisenhorn. "Her psionic essence was too far detached from her mortal relics. Also, I have reason to believe the means and process of her death were so reductive, so annihilating, that nothing sensible remained. I reached out and touched something, but it was not coherent."
Eisenhorn shifted in his seat and took a sip from a glass of Amasek that had been placed by his side. His hand was shaking.
"I extracted only one thing," he went on. "A brief fragmentary expression of an old fortress. It was not a clear mental image, but research had shown that there were several old structures in the Carinine region, old fortresses from the settlement era. This place, Helter, resembled the vision. It was the only such structure that remained intact within the vicinity of the bodies that were found in situ. So, I transferred my party here to begin an investigation, a thorough search of the surrounding area.
And you brought the bodies too? Said Drusha.
Yes, replied Eisenhorn, so I could repeat the auto-seance process with each one. It was a grueling process. Some were utterly inert. From the rest, I obtained nothing but incoherent pain. So, I widened my search and conducted similar divinations at the sites where bodies were found, as well as other locations in the forest. Again, nothing. As you have demonstrated, convincingly, they were dump sites. No psychometric echo of the victims' lives or the moments of their deaths would have lingered there anyway. The rain was beating hard now. Lightning blinked in the high windows.
About today, said Drusha.
In the woods. Eisenhorn cleared his throat. After you made your report, he said, I felt an urge to try again. To restage the divination with poor Thea's body. It was a grim and thankless effort that has left me drained. But I believe it had an unexpected consequence. While I was here, in the cold store, trying to reach Thea Inchibel, the considerable psychanic backwash rippled out into the surrounding forest. It stirred up ghosts, Magos Drusha. Ghosts I was not aware of. Which is how you came to meet Essek Fargul in the woods today. A man 30 years dead. I was conducting my seance in his home, Magos. The place where he had lived, and the place where he died. It is hardly surprising that it might raise him up into the sunlight.
Not to you, perhaps, said Drusha. I have to say, sir, that I am half out of my mind just now. Fear, sir, at what you are telling me, at you. Fear and incredulity. I spoke to the man for 10 minutes. He was real. He was solid. I could see him and hear him and smell his hair oil and the sweat of a body that has walked briskly in the sun for a whole afternoon. I shook his hand.
We have used the word ghost carelessly, Magos, said Eisenhorn. A psionic manifestation can be very real, utterly convincing, especially to one who does not realize that it is what it is.
Or that something like it could even exist, said Drusha. May I have an Amasek?
Eisenhorn made a small nod. An Ordler Jaff came over. She handed Drusha a fine old glass filled with Amasek.
If it eases your mind at all, said Eisenhorn. I doubt the phantom of Essek Fargul knew he was a ghost either.
With respect, it doesn't really, said Drusha.
He knocked back the drink in one. Jaff, waiting patiently nearby, stepped in and refilled the glass.
What did you speak of, Magos?
Asked Eisenhorn. Drusha shrugged feebly.
We talked as two men of similar interest might if they met by chance, he replied. Of nature, of the country and its various species. He had a leaning to natural history. He asked if I was a visitor, if I was staying nearby. He told me he was a local man with a timber business, and—
When he asked you that, Eisenhorn interrupted, what did you say?
I told him yes, said Drusha, that I was staying in the area. I didn't say where, so he asked me if I was a guest of his neighbor.
His neighbor?
A friend, a local man of some influence who entertained famously.
His name?
His name? Drusha echoed. He frowned. I can't recall. Straker? No, Draker. Something like that. Draven something. Draven Sirk? Stark?
Sark, said Eisenhorn. Was that the name?
I think it was. I can't be sure, but Sark, Draven Sark, I feel that's what he said.
So did Thea,
said Eisenhorn, quietly. Vorier rose to his feet.
My lord, he said, you said you got nothing today. I didn't think I had, interrogator, said Eisenhorn. Just sounds. Noises. The wailing psionic roar of the warp.
But one sound repeated. And now the Magos says the name. I know that's what it was. A name. Sark. Thea Inchabel was screaming it.
I will begin a search for the name, said Jaff.
She looked at Drusha.
Do you know the spelling?
Of course I don't, said Drusha.
Eisenhorn slowly rose to his feet, almost clawing at the edge of the table for support.
Throne, he murmured. All along Inchabel was trying to tell me something. It was the last remaining fragment of her, the only thing she had strength of will to hold on to. One word. One name. And I didn't realize.
Medea Betancourt had come to his side to steady him.
You should rest, Gregor, she said.
I should work.
Leave it to us for now, she said, shaking her head. Let us do the research. Rest and regain your strength. You're no good to us otherwise.
I know where he lived, said Drusha. Everyone looked at him. This Draven Sark, said Drusha. The ghost told me. He said Sark was a neighbor. He lived in another old fortress close by. Down towards the pass, he said, and older than this place. Pre-Uderin, he called it. Its name is Kestri.